Welcome to a special presentation from KRBD. This month, we're bringing you the candidates for local elected office here in Ketchikan. In tonight's call-in forum, we'll hear from candidates for Ketchikan City Council. A total of 2 seats are up for election this year. In random order, here are the 3 candidates seeking a 3-year seat on the Assembly. They are Jay Matani, Lalette Kistler, and Jana Lee Gage. I'd like to welcome our candidates and invite our listeners and viewers on Facebook to call in with questions for the candidates. The number to call is 907-225-9655. We'll be taking listener questions for the next hour or so. You can also leave a comment on the live video on KRBD's Facebook page. We're asking our candidates to keep their answers to roughly 2 minutes. I'll jump in and ask the candidate to wrap things up if the answer goes much beyond that. Please respect our time limits so that everyone can participate as fully as possible. So with those rules in mind, let's get things started with opening statements. We'll go first to Jay Matani. I'll be rotating who speaks first. Mr. Matani, your opening statement.
Good evening. I'm Jay Matani. I'm a 26-year resident of Ketchikan. I bring to the table diversity and a 30-year business experience. I bring to the table transparency. I bring to the table working with our partner cruise lines so that we diversify and have a green tourism. But also, what has happened the last year, there was COVID, which shut us down, the economy tanked, the funds in the coffers were depleted. We need to work at bringing in other diversified businesses that will sustain us if any such thing happens again. Transparency, supporting the different departments, and being able to work with each other for a better Ketchikan is not telling the people what to do, but it is listening to the community and enforcing or acting on their will. So I seek your support, Jay Matani.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Matani. Next, we'll go to Lalette Kistler. Opening statement. Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're running for city council.
I came to Ketchikan in 1982. I've been involved in so many different sectors of the community, not because I jump around a lot, because I get bored. I started off at Tatsuta's and grocery, went to the meat department. After checking, I became the startup manager for the deli. I was the birthday book lady on the radio. I was also a shop steward, so I've experience in the union. Then I moved over to State Farm, and I was there for like 25 years before I got bored. I did insurance and banking and securities, sold mutual funds, and helped people try and figure out what in the world insurance was all about. Really good explaining things to people so they understand, so they're not confused. That makes me a good collaborator. I like to work with other people. I like to get other people's ideas. I'm not closed-minded. I have common sense reasoning. I've been self-employed also since 1986. We had a drywall business. I have my music lessons that I do. I was the chair of the Performing Arts Center Committee, and I learned how the City Council and the Borough Assembly worked at that point, or didn't work, whatever. I was in a musical review that we did with the cruise ships. So I learned about the visitor industry. I just have a lot of experience with a lot of different things that I think I could help Ketchikan.
All right, thank you very much, Lalette Kistler. Next, we'll go to Jana Lee Gage, your opening statement.
Good evening. My name is Jana Lee Gage, and I am a 6th generation born and raised in Ketchikan and running for a 3rd term. This would be my 3rd set of 3 years. Before serving the last 6 years on the city council, I graduated with a bachelor's degree in fine art, worked as a bartender, was the GED examiner in Kotzebue for 5 years, worked for Kenai and Ketchikan Alcohol Safety Action Program for 6 years. Today, I still continue to teach the 12-hour alcohol class on long weekends for the youth court and various other people in the community that need it. I currently work for Tlingit and Haida. And in addition, you will find me volunteering time and skills to many nonprofits in the community. I've spent most of my life living, working, and volunteering, meeting people where they're at. As an individual living with a disability, I understand the difficulties of getting back on my feet after an accident. And I've spent about 15 years working and developing an understanding of the complexities and complicated issues surrounding many of our social programs, including substance, homelessness, mental health, and disability issues. And over the past 6 years, spent a lot of time working towards a more robust hospital lease, which I'm really glad to see has come to fruition and been signed. So I'm looking forward to another 3 years.
All right. Thank you very much, Janely Gage. So as I said, we're going to be rotating who speaks first. So Lalette Kistler, you'll get the first crack at this next question. And it's a big one. It's a two-part question. So just in 2 minutes, what do you see as the most pressing issues affecting the city of Ketchikan, and what can the city do to address them? Lalette Kistler.
The budget's going to be huge. Oh, gosh, there's so many things. The budget's going to be a nightmare. The homeless situation it's going to affect the homeless situation, not only affects the people that are homeless, but it also affects the businesses in town, because it's how we project ourselves. And it also affects the police. The police are busy hurting homeless people instead of trying to catch crooks and what have you, meth dealers and all those terrible things. We need to respect our police and our first responders. In times of trouble, we can't cut back on the police in times of trouble. It just doesn't make sense. I think we need to try and find a way to fund some dash cams for the police, because that's going to help with the whole community feeling like, number one, the police don't have to explain themselves, and number two, the citizens don't feel like they're going to be taken advantage of. And so I think that will be helpful. Trying to replace Carl Amelon is going to be a Herculean task. We have to find somebody who wants to stay in Ketchikan. That's the biggest thing. I'd rather have somebody local in there who knows what's going on than have some fly-by-night come in and 6 months later he decides he can't stand it in Ketchikan because he doesn't like the rain. So those are the biggest things for me.
All right, thank you. Next, we'll go to Janely Gage. What do you see as the most pressing issues affecting the city of Ketchikan, and what can the city do to address them?
Well, to be brutally honest, that budget is going to be, even though I've done one for 6 years, it's going to be a priority. And my priority in this instance is to support the staff in the very difficult decisions that we're going to have to come to confront. We already have a skeleton crew. Add in non-existent budget, and the question is to where we go from here. I mean, remember this, it's like our crew that work in water, sewer, and garbage, and all our city jobs are our neighbors, our friends, and our family. Many of them I grew up with, I went to high school with, I went to grade school with. And so I want, if anything, looking for other ways. I mean, it's going to be tough. They pay the same fees we pay, and the last thing I want to see is jobs cut, where we barely have enough folks to meet the needs and supply the services. All of these things have to be taken into consideration, and they're not to be done lightly. And it's very hard when, you know, with the loss of our manager. And we have amazing staff, so I know that they will meet the challenge, but I know that it's going to be a tough one. Our police department, fire department, all have lost some people, and so there's going to be some major changes and we're going to have to meet people where they're at in those areas. But we also have some great crew members that on all of these, in all of these areas that have been there for years. And I always look at it like this, the staff, the managers are one part, one piece, but what makes the manager look good is their staff. And they're, you know, they're a good, they're an amazing group of people. To be honest with you, I can only say with the way the budget, with the lack of funds due to no cruise industry for the year 2020 and COVID, there's going to be some cuts, there's going to be some loss. But I'm not sure how that's going to look, but I definitely will go into looking at it and trying to find other ways to do it before cutting jobs just like we did last year. So.
All right. Thank you very much, Janelle Gage. Jay Matani, your answer to the question, what do you see as the most pressing issues affecting the city of Ketchikan, and what should the city do to address them? Mr. Matani, you are muted.
Sorry about that. I agree with both the candidates. The first biggest issue we face coming down the pike is the budget. The budget in the past has been assigned to the council to decide how to use funds, where to put the funds. But what has to be done is the budget has to be assigned by the council to the staff how to use it. We have a crackerjack expert staff in place in Ketchikan. I've got to agree with Jana Lee on that. They have kept the city going for the year and last year and a half. We'll have to find a way to make cuts where we do not lose any employees. We do not cut any employees. For years, the saying is our salary scale in Ketchikan is top heavy. The top heavy managers are getting paid. And then we go to hear that they wanted to cut the low end jobs. We cannot cut any jobs. Maybe bring it to the managers, to the management team to take a little bit of a cut till we secure more funding, till business comes back. So we make sure that everybody is in place. We need to support the police department. We do not have a police chief. We have police officers that retired. We've lost 45 years to 90 years of experience. We've got to hire police officers that will help protect the city. We've got to give them the tools like body cams, you know, other tools to make sure that they do their job, that they are protected and they are respected. We got to respect our firefighters. We got them a great truck, but we've got to keep them trained and working so that they protect the city of Ketchikan. The other big pressing issue is we've got no city manager. Most of our department heads are gone. The fire chief is gone. The police chief is gone. Ports and Harbors needs a chief to run the city. We have to get together, be cohesive, find a committee that will do the research first and hire the best of the best, not just settle. So Carl Amelon, the late Carl Amelon, was a unique character. We will have to separate KPU and the city to do the job. We've got to work at that. We've got to hire a police chief. We've got to hire a fire chief. We've had to hire a ports and harbors chief. I mean, last election, they wanted to, we took away the ports from giving it out. And we thought by now we would have somebody in place. We don't have that. That's a pressing issue. The other pressing issue is homelessness. I mean, if you walk downtown, I live downtown. I walk downtown. I own a business downtown. The homeless issue is not about people not having money. It's about mental health. We've got to form mental health teams. We've got to support the nonprofits that will go out there and talk to these people because they are not coming to us. The mental health issue has to be addressed slowly, reaching out to these people so that we can get them into a shelter. We can get them into housing so we can clean up downtown. And the other thing is our biggest industry is the cruise ship industry. We need to work with our partner cruise lines, get funding from them, get them to help us extend the downtown docks before business ends up at Ward Cove. We've got to work at that. I bring business acumen. I bring business experience that I can deal with them. I have hired, fired people over the years. I've been in business since 1983 with a business degree. And I just want to see Ketchikan at its best, by the best, for the best, for decades to come, for the kids and for all of us.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mitani. I want to express, our thoughts are with the family of the late Carl Amelon. He served for 26 years as Ketchikan city manager, and he will be tough to replace. But as each of you alluded to, that is going to be one of the tasks that a new city council will have to take on. So starting now with Janely Gage, I want to ask, how should the city go about the search for a replacement, and what would you look for in a new city manager? Janely Gage.
Well, for one, I would, I believe we need to follow the guidelines of the charter of the city. For two, one of the discussion pieces, and I believe to be true, is to make sure that we put not only it out wherever we can maybe pick someone up or get as many applicants as we can, but also to look locally too. But to make sure that we do a broad scope so that we have enough candidates so that we can literally make sure that we're getting our best, the best candidate or the best person for the job. When it comes to picking somebody, I think that finding somebody with the integrity that Carl had and working towards somebody with that kind of diverse background is gonna be, hard. He's a tough set of shoes to fill. And in the 6 years I worked with him, I was really amazed. And actually learned a lot about, his integrity. And I think that's another thing, is finding somebody with the same integrity, somebody who has a cultural background, who has respect to the cultures of Ketchikan, and the diversity of the many jobs involved in that that particular hat that he wore. But right now, I think with the amount of work we have going on with our staff, having looking, usually we'll go with a headhunter and look for people, but putting it out there and getting it out there and just going through the as many, depending on how many people apply, but I don't want to see us just pick somebody because we need somebody. I don't want to see that mistake made. I've seen that mistake made before in jobs, and then you're fixing more messes than you are getting anything done. So I understand that this will be a project. It'll be a time consuming, but I hope with really good concrete, boots out there looking for somebody, that we can actually get a good pool of individuals interested in the job, interested in living in Ketchikan, or somebody that might fit that bill that lives here.
All right. Thank you very much, Janely Gage. I want to remind listeners, you're listening to KRBD's Ketchikan City Council Call-In Forum. Candidates are taking your questions. You can call us at 225-9655 to ask your question. We're also broadcasting a video feed live on KRBD's Facebook page, where you can also leave a comment with your questions for the candidates. Up next is going to be Jay Mitani. We're talking about how the city should go about the search for a replacement city manager and what you would look for in a new manager. Jay Mitani.
First of all, the staff is putting together a resume and adding to the old resume. We will have to form a committee that will work along with the city council to get resumes or even find a headhunter, because there are, I understand, more than 60 cities looking for managers right now across the nation. So we will have to find the headhunter that will recruit candidates that will want to live in the city of Ketchikan, will want to work and be here long-term, respect the cultures of Ketchikan, respect the community of Ketchikan, a person who will be able to work with a fire department, the police department, with KPU, with public works, and be cohesive, will be educated enough and be willing to listen to the community. We will have to go out there and vet these resumes and finalize which candidates are suitable enough and which candidates will live here for decades long term to lead this city into the future. But I also believe that the city and KPU has to be two different entities, because Mr. Amelon was a unique individual with unique skills, with a unique set of intellect that helped him manage both issues. But we have to get the best of the best. It could be local, it could be somebody from outside. I'll even shout out to Lacey. Lacey right now is the acting manager and she's doing a great job. So that is enhancing her resume as well. I would like to see her put her name in the pot as well, but we've got to do an extensive search. It's not going to be an easy search. It's got to take its own time. We cannot bring somebody in there for the sake of bringing somebody in there. We've got to have the best of the best for the best city in Alaska.
All right, Lilette Kistler, your perspective on how the city should go about the search for a replacement city manager and what you would look for in a new city manager.
Yeah, definitely don't want to settle. That is for sure. I was told Lacey lives out of town because she has been handling everything wonderfully, amazing. I understand that the city, that they need to live in the city because you have to have some skin in the game. It really makes sense, but man, I would hate to miss out on that. Yes, we need to not only make sure that the person that we are looking for wants to live in Ketchikan, but also their family wants to live in Ketchikan. That is what half the time gets the people when we bring professionals in. The spouse just can't deal with it here. So that's another thing to look for. I want somebody who's a problem solver. I don't want somebody that's got a big old fancy list of credentials and all this. Yeah, they need to know what they're doing. I'm not saying they don't need to have credentials, but they need to have a demonstrated problem solving skills, because Ketchikan is just one big problem waiting to happen and we don't have any help anywhere. We're all alone on an island. When you're alone on an island, you want the best guy that can make good with what is going on. And that's what Carl did. He took over KPU and ended up just giving the whole thing over to him because he took care of it. He saw a problem, he took care of it, and Ketchikan's the better for it. I would like to see that type of person get hired. Problem solvers.
All right, thank you very much. So again, listeners, we are holding our Ketchikan City Council call-in forum at the moment. Candidates are taking your questions. You can call us 225-9655. We also have a video live on KRBD's Facebook page. You can leave a comment there with your questions for the candidates. And in fact, this next one comes from our Facebook page. This comes from Vicki O'Brien. Outside of the visitor industry and the businesses that have grown up supporting it, what ideas do you have to encourage economic growth in Ketchikan? First, we will go to Jay Matani. Mr. Matani, you are muted.
This is happening a lot. That's a great question from Vicki. We, as I have stressed in meetings, as I have stressed in my agenda, we need to diversify our economy. Besides tourism, we've got to work with our tourism partners, with our cruise line partners to solidify the industry. But with what happened, we need to bring in small cottage industry like Forged and Found, the kelp harnessing. That industry is taking off. Hydroponics, that industry is taking off. We need to support industries like that. Farmers markets, bring in farmers that will grow stuff in Ketchikan. Dairy farming, okay? And then also we can reach out to industries that make semiconductors, that make chips, and bring them here as small cottage industries rather than sending them to Argentina or China or somewhere else. We need to work with the Microsofts of the world. We need to work with the IBMs of the world and startups, bring in some small intellectual startups that will work here, employ 10 people, employ 20 people, and grow this industry. It's not going to be overnight. It's not just turn on a switch. It will take painstaking time, but we've got to start looking. I said that last year when I ran, but we still ended up with same old. So we have to go outside. First, we've got to support the small cottage industries that exist here and help them grow, and then attract other industry. Go outside and look. Ketchikan's weather is very conducive for semiconductor industries. Bring them here. Show them our town. You know, not fund them, but support them. We need to diversify our economy with other businesses.
Thank you very much, Jay Matani. Next, we'll go to Lalette Kistler. This is a listener question. So what ideas do you have to encourage economic growth in Ketchikan outside of the visitor industries and outside of the visitor industry and the businesses that have grown up supporting it? Lalette.
I think we could expand some of the visitor industries into the off season. Yes, we need to diversify. I think there's some things that could bring people here in the wintertime that would help. It's very difficult. I ran a deli, Tatsuta's, and in the summertime it was gangbusters and everybody came in, and then all of a sudden everything's cut down to half business and you have to work with staff, you know, cutting that. It's difficult. Trying to make a year round business is much better. UCOR, I would love to see them come in and build their sorting, whatever you call it when they pull out the good stuff. That would be awesome. Problem with bringing big industries into Ketchikan is we don't have a whole lot of space to put a big industry. And, you know, maybe Ward Cove, maybe they could do something out of Ward Cove. But the bedroom community idea, I think, is awesome. I think we really need to push that more, making this a bedroom community. Our arts community, I don't know if we still are, but, you know, we're one of the 100 top art communities in the United States. That is a drawing point for professionals. They like those kind of things. Well, non-professionals do too. I guess everyone does. But, you know, quality of life, those things are quality of life issues. And I think it could bring people here to enrich our little town.
All right. Thank you, Lilith Kistler. Next, we'll go to Janalee Gage. The question is, outside of the visitor industry and the businesses that have grown up supporting it, what ideas do you have to encourage economic growth here in Ketchikan?
Well, I think I'm a little backwards in this respect due to the fact that I didn't want to bring people here per se. I think we need to start actually investing in our own community members, remote working force, instead of pulling people into our community from somewhere else. Invest in our own community members who might want to be working remotely. I say that because we have many people, I think, that could do a job that's remote. And I think that take for granted our community members. And those are, at the end of the day, if we want to diversify our community resources, those are our resources. The people of this community. When we get into the brass tacks of, you know, we have actually got some amazing things going on already. We have the hydroponics program, which I hope sticks around. We have the maritime program, guys doing seaweed, clams and oysters, and which is an amazing project and keeps growing and growing. I think we also need to take a good look at how some of our larger industries are destroying our fishing grounds, the sacro fishing. These are things that are taking away from our community and our resources that allow the smaller fishermen and people to make, you know, a living wage. But I think there's a lot to be said about with the COVID, understanding the ability to work from home. A lot of us went home to work. I did it. We have the internet capacity, but it's time to invest in our own community members and help them find those remote jobs. They're not easy to find. They're not an easy, there's a lot of fake websites for jobs and different things. So it makes it, you know, a little bit difficult. And I think those are the areas, you know, looking at how can we put our own workforce to work in areas that, you know, like remote work, so that they can stay in their communities and in our community, because they're the ones that count.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Jenny Gage. You're listening to KRBD's Ketchikan City Council call-in forum. We're taking your questions for the council candidates at 225-9655. You can also check out our Facebook page where we have a live video feed of this forum. You can also leave a comment on there with your questions for the candidates. So next, I want to talk a little bit about how you make decisions, because that's like, you know, that's the big thing that you do is you are presented with policy questions. What should the city do? You're presented with options, but then you have to make the decision. You're the ones that have to make the decision. So I want to ask, starting with Lillette Kistler, when you're faced with a difficult question, how do you decide what the best course of action for the city is?
Research. I go right. I can't make a decision just from someone just telling me something, or I have to go in and understand everything about it and bring it all together and talk to other people. I like to throw things off of other people and get feedback, and it just brings a clearer picture of things. And I don't like to use, I have a lot of experience in, like I said, different areas in the town, so that helps. I know a lot of different people in town, and that helps. Often I'll be helping somebody with something in some committee or whatever, and they'll say, oh, I think maybe, I think I got them in my book, you know, over the years. My phone book is from the 90s, back to the 90s. Some of those phone numbers still work, or you can find them on Facebook, right? But I love to collaborate. I like to come up with different ideas. It's disturbing to some people that don't like to change, but I like to change. I like to fix things. I like to make things better. And I like to do my research and figure out ways to do it better and get ideas about doing things better.
Thank you, Lillette Kistler. Next, we'll go to Janely Gage. We're talking about how you make decisions when you're faced with a difficult question. How do you decide what the best course of action for the city is?
Well, research. If it's an issue that's on the council that I've done in the past, I go back to why. Past history, why the council chose to make that decision at the time. I look at all of the variables. For example, the decision to consolidate the KPU with the city manager's job. When that was being worked on, it was due to the pulp mill being shut down. Revenues similar to what happened with the cruise industry being shut down, gone. So right there, we had this huge lack of funding. So this is where they consolidated basically a job that and brought in a savings of around $11+ million, give or take, which will be sometime next month. The council, whoever's sitting on it, will get a play-by on that particular item, on why, what were the benefits, et cetera. with that consolidation, it saved not only the millions of dollars in duplicate services, like two managers and staff that he had, that the two entities had, and plus an extra HR. There's two HR, there was multiple assistants, and those got consolidated. The other thing that it did, and this is another thing to consider when you're thinking about these big projects, you know, there's, you got to look at the history and then look at, okay, is it still going to work today? Would it still work today? You know, so where, you know, but once, until you have all the pieces in place and a new manager and knowing what that person can do, there, it's kind of a weighted issue. And so it can get hard to make a quick decision on something like that. But in the end game for me, it's looking at all the pieces, the past history, why it was done, why it may still work today, why it may not work today or in the future, and what would be the best course of action.
All right. Thank you very much for that response. And finally, we'll go to Jay Matani. The question is, when you're faced with a difficult question, how do you decide what the best course of action for the city is?
Well, first, if a policy decision or a question is put before me, which will affect the whole entire community of Ketchikan, the economy of Ketchikan, the budget of Ketchikan, research is the priority of what, how it's going to affect the community, how it's going to affect the city as a whole. Research, research, research. The second step would be ask a lot of questions of experts and go out to the community and see what the community wants, how it affects the community. Reach out to the different departments or reach out to the different segments of our community that it will affect. And based on input from the community, based on input from people in the know, you analyze everything and come up with the best decision that will serve this community, that will serve Ketchikan. And it's not gonna make everybody happy, but that's how you make the hard decisions, is by research and by getting community input, getting input from experts, and come up with the best solution, the best decision for that will affect all of us and affect the city.
All right, I want to go back a little bit to, we talked a little bit about the need to diversify the economy here in Ketchikan. And this is a question, again, from Facebook. This comes from Deborah Hayden. And I'm going to shorten the question just a little bit. Forgive me, Deborah. But so the candidates, they're all talking about the need for diversification in some of the industries that can grow here. She'd like to know what action the city can actually take that can accomplish these goals. Like, is there a city department that will train local workforce for remote jobs? Maybe a city department that will expand mariculture or hydroponics? On this, we will first go to Lilette Kistler. Excuse me. On this, we will first go to Janely Gage.
So I believe the, if I'm correct, the city has the social services gears, and the borough has the economic drivers. So there's, I'm not sure how the city would play in that. However, I think there's the support of, you know, organizations, let alone the, we have done several, like for instance, the WISH program, but that's also a social service program. So there's, I think to answer Deborah's question, there's the borough has certain things they can do, whereas the city can only do things that wrap around the, and I could be wrong, but in the past, what I know is that we can do a lot of things with the social services areas, but not within, and maybe we can help out. I would hope we could help out. I know we have several gifted grant writers on staff. I know that I think that there's some room to look at that and see where we can work with the borough in that area. It's one of the, I think working together with the borough is even more poignant at this point due to the fact that I really get tired of the split atoms here, because we're one community, and making sure that we're working to diversify our economy, but at the same time working with the borough in those areas, and where are the areas that we can fill the I know a lot of the grants tend to come from the borough, but that would be my that's one that I've always has always complexed me in various ways. But it'd be a good one to look into further.
All right, next we'll go to Jay Matani. The question from Deborah Hayden is, what action can the city actually take that will accomplish these economic diversification goals?
First of all, I'm not in favor of creating new departments, creating new bureaucracies. The borough of Ketchikan has the economic powers. They are the ones that drive the economy. We need to collaborate with the borough and supporting these industries and encouraging these industries, giving them grants, giving them tax breaks, like the kelp farms, like the hydroponics farms, like the farmers market, like we've done for years for Walmart and what we did for Vigor. We have to support indigenous citizens of the city and even of the borough of all of Ketchikan, because it affects all of us, to lift them up, to support them with the means, to provide them with information, provide them with research and funding so that they can go out and get into a startup or get into an industry that will diversify our economy in Ketchikan. But we have to work with the borough, because the economic powers come out of the borough. The city mostly deals with social welfare.
All right, next we'll go to Lalette Kistler. The question is, what action can the city actually take that will accomplish the economic diversification goals that we were just talking about a couple of questions ago?
Yeah, first of all, I would give Deborah Hayden a call, because she knows a lot about those things. basically, I think, you know, it's a kind of a marketing kind of thing that you need to do to encourage things and basically get out of the way. Yeah, try and get some grants. See if you can get some grants to maybe start something up, and hopefully something would blossom from there. But just creating an environment, you know, conducive to growth is it. I mean, you know, a lot of people don't like that the Ward Cove took away our cruise ships from downtown, but that's exactly why we sold the Ward Cove property for economic development. And yes, that was the Ketchikan borough that did that, because they are, well, they ended up with it. but they're doing it. That's the American dream. They saw a problem. The city was too slow to take care of the problem, and they swooped in and took care of it for us. And I think that's the way it should be. We shouldn't be trying to do business that the private sector can do, which would allow startup businesses and expansion of businesses and things like that.
All right, next I want to go to a question also from Facebook. And actually, before that, I want to remind listeners that you're listening to KRBD's Ketchikan City Council call-in forum. We're taking your questions. You can call and ask your question live on the air at 907-225-9655. And of course, you can also watch the video feed live on our Facebook page, where you can leave a comment with your questions for the candidates. We can't promise to get to all of them, but we are looking through them. And next, I want to go to a question from Jack and Bev Davies. And the question is, what would you do to protect us and our hospital from COVID, which is surging here and north and south of us, creating difficulty in finding beds? As we've heard, there's a severe hospital crunch in Anchorage, and other places in the Northwest are also having trouble with the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, the city doesn't have an emergency operations center anymore. But I wanted to ask you guys, starting with Jay Mitani, what role do you see for the city in addressing the COVID-19 pandemic? Jay Mitani, go ahead.
First of all, we have to encourage people. We have to promote people, to let people know getting vaccinated is safe. We need to get our vaccination rates up to at least 80-85%. You've got to educate the public that those theories that vaccination mutes them or somebody is watching them or listening to them are not really true and vaccinations are safe. Get the people vaccinated, vaccinated, vaccinated. Now, the EOC doesn't exist, but through the public health department, we need to make sure that healthcare workers, nurses, doctors that come into the community are tested. I believe quarantine them for 48 hours too, to make sure that the virus doesn't reach our old folks home, doesn't reach our hospital, doesn't reach our community. We also have had a great, great success with the cruise ships coming in. We've had no cruise ship passenger bringing in any COVID cases into Ketchikan. They had one case on yesterday's ship. They isolated them on board, and nothing came into the community, despite the rumors out there that the cruise ships are bringing in COVID. It is people that fly in, be smart about it, mitigate, distance yourself. If you're sick, stay home, but get yourself vaccinated, get the health, protect the police department, protect the fire department, protect the nurses and doctors, protect the first responders, make sure they are tested and taken care of. And if they have an issue, they are isolated and treated so that it doesn't reach the community on the whole and spreads like fire. This virus will spread like fire. That's why, folks, get out there and get vaccinated. Thank you so much.
Next, we'll go to Lillette Kistler. What role do you see for the city in addressing the COVID-19 pandemic?
Education. I know that's a borough thing, but education marketing, I suppose. You know, I have a friend who hadn't been vaccinated, and you know, we've been conversing on Facebook, and just talking about it made her think that maybe she should get vaccinated, and she asked for advice on getting vaccinated. And it's like, wow. It's amazing to me that there are still people out there looking for advice about vaccinations. So there's a fear, there's an ignorance. I totally believe in the vaccines, but I totally believe in the right not to get vaccinated. And I don't understand why no one is recognizing natural immunity. And Bev and I have been going back and forth on the COVID site, and I love that she's going toe to toe with me and not backing down. I love hearing what she has to say because I want to know how people feel about things. And I want them to know how I feel about things. And I respect both views. I don't think mandates are the way to go because it just makes people mad. I'll say something I can say on the radio. you know, and all they do is dig in their heels and they just stick to their guns. And the more you force them to do something, I mean, people are just grown-up toddlers. They just learn how to manage their outsides, but the insides still don't want to do something that someone tells them they have to do. And the only way that they're going to want to do these things is if they get the education go to their doctor, get advice from the doctor, talk to somebody you trust, be somebody to trust. Don't be the person that is getting in someone's face because they haven't been vaccinated. Ask them why. Acknowledge that is a valid thought, and get the conversation going so that it's not you against me, against you, against you. It's not the way to go.
All right. Thank you, Lillette Kistler. Janelle Gage, your thoughts. What do you, what role do you see for the city in addressing the COVID-19 pandemic?
I know that with all our education pieces, it would be nice to some, I think we need to revamp some and get them out there. As we're watching caregivers in Anchorage pleading for leadership on a daily basis, I don't know if we're not far off from that. We have, as of today, I believe 45 new cases. I don't believe it's going to change from that. I see a lot of people masking and taking it upon themselves, which is great. I'm vaccinated, but I'm still masking up. As an individual who's been in the hospital for extreme and a very horrible accident, which I won't even get into, but you know, if we're not even talking about the shot or the medical piece, the cost of ending up in a hospital for a few days or a week is astronomical. You know, even if you have I mean, some of us have insurance, some of us don't. For many, that's a $50,000 ticket, a bill. And that's a bill that goes to our healthcare system at some point when people can't afford it. So majority of people that are ending up having the harder levels of care, especially with this new variant, are not vaccinated. And all I can say is I've had I remember getting my shots to go to school. I have my yellow card. I can pull it out right now. It's in my bag. My kids have their shot records for going to school. I remember my grandfather had the flu of the 1898, and I'm forgetting the name of it, which were not too far from the numbers of deaths for that. He at the time was a child, and people are saying, well, it won't hurt the kids that much. They said that about that flu in 1898 and 1910 and that area. And you know what? He had a hole in his heart that he lived with for most of his life till he had open heart surgery in 1976, one of the first heart surgeries ever. And so, you know, I can only plead with people to get the vaccination. I tend to be really receptive to things. I don't do well on medications, and all I got was a slight headache. Yeah. And if it keeps me out of the hospital, more power to me, and I will keep masking up just to be on my safe side, because I spent a month in the hospital. I know what that's like, and I know what it cost me. It cost me almost $1 million, if not more. At the end of the day, what are you willing to pay for it? And the only way I can say, if I can make people do something, great. But I can't make people do stuff if they're not going to want to do it. But if we really want to open our economy, we need to get vaccinated.
All right. Thank you very much, Janelle Gage. So we were planning to go until 8 p.m., but we have quite a few questions from the listenership. Again, you can call us at 225-9655 or comment on our video feed live on KRBD's Facebook page with your questions for the candidates. We're going to go a little bit past 8 p.m., if that's all right with everybody. But I had a couple of questions that I wanted to get to. This one, it comes from Christina Townsend. This one starts off with, what is the city going to do about the climate crisis? She says, Canada just banned all single-use plastics. She says, light pollution is now horrific due to the light choices of the city. So I guess there are environmental concerns that are embedded in that. Lilette Kistler, let's go with the big question first. What should the city do about the climate crisis?
Right now we have a budget crisis, and there's no room to spend any more money on anything else. So we can't think about anything like that. As far as the climate crisis, yeah, changing lights. That's not going to happen right now. It would be nice to have some kind of sorting abilities so that we're not throwing stuff away in the landfills that could be reused. That would be wonderful. I think what we need to do is actually plan. Things are warming up. Sea levels are rising. We're right on the ocean. Regardless of how it happened or if we can stop it from happening, it is happening. And we do need to make sure we have our clearances and that our docks and things, when we're planning for the future, we need to plan for a higher sea level. We do need to be looking forward to that and trying to do what we can in the meantime.
All right, thank you very much. Next, we'll go to Janely Gage. What should the city of Ketchikan do about the climate crisis?
Well, I think, individually, we all have to take some accountability for how we deal with our own waste. I have found that I have brought up the plastic bag ban. I would like to see that put in place due to the fact that it works in almost all communities. Hawaii has it. People bring their own bags. I started bringing my own bags to the grocery stores. And what I found is that I actually take home less bags with grocery. I got tired of the plastic bags. When I lived up north, the plastic bags were such a nuisance and an issue because people would dispose of them correctly, but the wind, the weather, garbage cans get knocked over, bags get loose. So you would find, we used to call it the tree of bags along the Wasilla Highway. And you can see plastic bags all up in the trees back in the day. I don't think you can see them much now because they did implement a bag ban. That's a tough question due to the fact that I think that there's a lot we can do individually. I drive a hybrid. I love my hybrid. I love not having to fill up but maybe twice a month. I would love to be able to do full electric. I know a few people that have gone full electric, and I have not purchased another vehicle due to the fact I'm waiting. it's a good conversation to have. We've gone over the wind idea of wind. We have hydro, which is great because we're not using diesel to run our electric. We do have solar road lights out north. All of those have a solar piece in it, so it catches, so it regenerates itself. Though, there's small little things we can do individually. I know a lot of people that are putting up solar panels, but yeah, I'm all for whatever we can do to mitigate that, but also make things inexpensive.
All right, thank you very much. Jay Matani, what can the city of Ketchikan do about the climate crisis?
Again, education, get radio ads, take out newspaper ads, teach people how to deal with their waste. I believe we need to start gradually cutting out plastic bags and plastic bottles. And it's not going to happen overnight. You cannot mandate people to do stuff, but educate people to do stuff. Take your own bags to the grocery store, get your groceries, limit the use of plastics, limit the use of discharging gray water into our lakes and into our ocean. The biggest thing that the city needs to do, despite rumors that the cruise ships are dumping, no, our sewage plant that cleanses our waste, we need to work with the federal government, find funds to fix that, because that's antiquated and that's dumping stuff into our oceans and our waterways. We've got to start there. We've got to start educating people and start working with people to not to mandate, but to reduce the use of plastics and to reduce the use of products that really destroy the ozone layer, destroy the climate, educate and work with the people, not mandate the people, lead the people to get into habits that the waste disposal bill be controlled, and also educate the people. Maybe we need to come up with ideas of recycling. I know recycling has been tried here before and it's expensive, but find other ways of recycling stuff, that things that are harmful to the climate don't end up at the dump.
All right, thank you very much, Jay. So I'm just gonna go to one more question before we go to closing statements. And this is, this is an issue that I believe at least a couple of you brought up in as we got this thing started. The fire department has reported an uptick in opioid overdoses this year, calls in which they've had to use the life-saving drug Narcan. And I'm wondering what ideas the various candidates have for what the city should do to address the problem. And I'm asking for, what specifically should the city be doing to help address this problem. Janelle Gage, we'll go to you first.
Well, this is a very complicated area, and there is there's so many components to this alone. I believe it's important to look at all of the areas. There, first of all, we have in the last month it was released that we had a 10% increase in housing costs. So although we might see a multitude of people with mental health issues with homeless issues, that is a major piece. We are also seeing our own community members struggling to keep a roof over their head with the minimum wages and cost of living and just the cost of freight being raised 45%. The complexity of it is there is, first of all, if it was me, if I could just pull out of a hat what I would do, I would make sure that there was a low income housing. I would look at where we could get those low income housing. I would look at a housing first project. When we meet people with housing first, a lot of times we think that, oh, we can just tell people to snap out of it. You gotta stop. Addiction is not that easy. We have to meet them halfway. And one of the key pieces to helping somebody with an opioid addiction or who is also homeless is getting them housing, because a lot of times they're escaping from their the situation they're in, or they don't have a place where they can sit and feel safe enough to start having that realization of where they want to be. I actually had the privilege of going up and checking out the Housing First project in Juneau. And I asked pointedly, what did you see in the first year? Well, in that first year with 35 rooms with their highest risk individuals, only a 98% drop in people having to go to using our emergency services. Many, they're the honeymoon piece. thinking that, oh, I'm going to screw up, I'm going to get kicked out, this isn't going to last forever. But once they got to past that, they began to, join in the groups, work through, maybe stop using the substance they were using less, eventually seeking the help they need. You cannot demand them to change without dependable housing first. And I think if I could go out tomorrow, snap my fingers and have housing for all of the homeless people, I would. I can't. Realistically, it's going to take the entire community to meet people at where they're at the moment. There's also medications that can help with helping somebody before they get into treatment. We have a lack of programs to help people in substance abuse from, treatment centers in Southeast and all of Alaska. It's actually, no matter where you go in the States, they've been lacking services all across the United States for probably the 12 years I worked in the programs.
All right. Thank you very much, Janely Gage. Next, we'll go to Jay Matani. The question is, what should the city do to address an uptick in opioid overdoses? What ideas do you have?
First of all, addiction is real. It's a disease. It's not something easy to deal with. What I have been saying is we've got to empower the nonprofits that work with individuals, that work with students in school, with the homeless. Send out teams, empower them to talk to these people. To bring Narcan or other medications to them is it's not the answer. It's talking to them. It's bringing them to a point where we understand each individual's need. Why are they overdosing? Why are they taking opioids? Bringing them to a point where they will on their own seek help and support them. Okay, support the nonprofits that are doing yeoman's work in Ketchikan. I know a lot of nonprofits are doing this to help these people. Also, bring education into the schools. We've had many young men and women that are overdosing, that are teenagers, that are young. We've got to bring education to them about the dangers of addiction and also support their mental health. Have mental health experts talk to them. It's not going to be easy because this uptick is also affecting our first responders from doing their jobs, the stress levels it brings to them. So we have got to reach out. We've got to support the nonprofits. We've got to support the medical community to reach out and talk to them. We also have to provide housing for the homeless. And a lot of these homeless won't go into housing or shelters if we tell them to, because I've told a lot of them downtown, can I take you to the shelter? It's a mental health issue. And we have to send out teams to reach out to them, talk to them, because the other candidate is right. I mean, this is an using drugs, using opioids is an escape because they have no safe place. So, as I said, we've got to educate them. We've got to have teams that will reach out to them and also support them by, providing housing, opening up the shelter, and not just the daycare, but all day shelter. And then again, I mean, we've had builders here want to build $500,000 houses. Those houses are not going to be for people of low income that need them. Educate, support, and provide.
All right, Jay Matani, thank you very much. Lalit Kistler, what should the city do to address an uptick in drug and opioid overdoses this year?
Yeah, I tell you what, education at an impressionable age does make a difference. I remember a science teacher when I was in junior high who was very frank about drugs, and back then drugs were pretty cool. Because he was straightforward, honest, and very simple about the effects of drugs and addictions, I was quite frankly, very afraid of addictions. And to this day, I don't like to do anything I might get addicted to. I'm one of those few people that have never smoked pot, never inhaled or not inhaled. I've been around it. I'm not saying I haven't been around it, you know, but as a singer, I had an out, you know. I didn't have to try it because I had a good excuse not to try it because it would ruin my voice, you know. But it's hard. It's so hard with peer pressure. Kids get into those things. And so education and these days, my gosh, junior high is way too late. These kids are way too smart, way too soon. They know too much too soon. And that's part of the problem, I think. Unfortunately, I've been touched very closely by this whole addiction crap. And these kids, they're looking for an escape. And getting them a house isn't always the answer. I went and talked to Andy Bernstein down at the police station, and he confirmed kind of what I thought, that the addicted ones are couch surfing. They're not the ones that are homeless. I tried to get this loved one was gonna have her own place, and that got her more stressed out, and she went back to using, and she was clean. She got put in jail, and I thought, great, that's the place for her. And then they let her out, and she overdosed the next day. It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. And they're not going to come out of it until they're ready to come out of it. And we have to find ways to lead them out, to have baby steps. We need halfway houses. We need places that they can go, that they'll be watched. The jail isn't a good place. My goodness. She sat there and got fed every day and got to sit on her butt. And you know, that's exactly what she wanted to do. Nothing, you know? They go to these drugs because they don't want to do anything. They don't want to feel anything. They just want to get away. So we need to find a way to bring them back. We need to find a way for them to connect with society. We need to get these kids before they resort to drugs. We need to have activities for them to do. I went and saw the Ketchikan Wellness Center. I found out what they're doing. They're doing some great things. They're doing the thing at the mall where kids can go. But they're not all the kids aren't going to go to the mall either. Of course, you know, ball fields are very important. The arts are very important. You know, those folks that aren't sportos, they need outlets too. And I know the performing arts, the theater, I've seen them help a lot of people. It's a mental health issue. We need more people that can help. We need to have mental health professionals more in town. There's not enough of them.
All right. Thank you, Lilith Kistler. We're going to finish this off with closing statements. We're going to go around once more, starting with Jay Matani. And what I want to do here is I want you to give your final pitch. What do you want people to be thinking about as they walk into the voting booth? They see three names. They can only pick two. Why should they pick your name? Jay Matani, go ahead.
I seek a mission and your support so that I can support the community to achieve what they want to achieve in the city. We are at a critical juncture. We need a city manager, we need a police chief, we need a fire chief, we need a public works person. We need to deal with our budget after COVID. We've got to keep our departments working. We've got to keep our people working. We've got to keep our community on the right path. Our police department has lost 95 years of experience. We need to support them, provide them with the tools so that they will protect our community. Same thing with our first responders. I seek your support because I bring 30 plus years of business acumen, dealing with budgets, dealing with HR, and thinking outside the box to make us the city a better place. I bring with me an intense responsibility to support the Second Amendment and not to try and water it down. I bring an intense responsibility to make sure the United States Constitution is upheld, our police department is upheld, our mental health workers are upheld, our community prospers from it. Cannot have same old, same old. I mean, last elections, transparency was promised, never happened. Everything goes into executive session, okay? We need to be accountable to the community. We serve them. I seek your permission to serve you, not to tell you what to do or to enforce protocols on you. I bring an experience and a promise to serve you by listening to you and making sure we are physically responsible in protecting all our first responders, our police force, our unions, thus protecting the community and making this a better place for generations to come.
Thank you very much, Jay Matani. Lilith Kistler, your closing statement. What do you want people to be thinking about in the voting booth as they're thinking about their choices?
My problem-solving skills is my best asset. I went to a job. I'm really good at fixing things. I think outside the box. I'm not happy with the status quo. I will always try and make things better. I never stop thinking. I don't know how many jobs I have right now. I would have to look at QuickBooks to figure it out. Maybe 5, I don't know. And they say, well, why do you want to do this? Because I want to help our town. And if you want something done, you ask a busy person. And this busy person knows a lot about Ketchikan in all the corners and all the different parts of town. We need to do something about the mental health problem. It's killing our community, literally. And we need to make sure and protect our people with our first responders and respecting them.
Thank you, Lilith Kistler. And we'll have the final closing statement from Jana Lee Gage.
Well, I would like to just say I am honored that I've been allowed to serve for the last 6 years. Over the last 6 years, I've worked really hard, fought really hard to negotiate a very robust hospital lease agreement that included a commitment to mental health and a formable annual rent contract and a transparent donation to the community and revenues earned here in this community, staying in this community. Hopefully we'll have the HAC board set up soon, which will be a committee that oversees the hospital where people, if they have issues or complaints, they can go straight to the HAC and report those. And those, so that I'm really looking forward to that critical piece being implemented. Ketchikan deserves, council members that are thinking of the people. We, as a community, have multiple challenges and some seem really impossible at times, and like the hospital contract, it felt like forever, but we eventually got there. I'm really in it for the long haul, and I'd be honored to take them on. There, we have so many things on our plate that, and you know, when I went in the first 3 years, I thought, oh, I don't know if I can do this, but you know, I'm always good with a challenge. And I just dig my feet in and read the, I remember one council packet that was the size of War and Peace. and I'm just glad that my grandmother instilled in me reading skills, like, you know, you gotta read. So with that, I'm honored. I would be honored to do another 3 years. Gunanchis, aha, and thank you.
And that's it for KRBD's Forum with candidates for Ketchikan City Council. Thanks to all our candidates for joining us. You've been great. Thanks to our listeners and viewers for tuning in. Once again, there are three candidates running for two available three-year seats. They are Jana Lee Gage, Lilith Kistler, and Jay Matani. Don't forget to vote. Election Day is October 5th. I've been your host, Eric Stone.